com.
8 minutes after seven, let me go to Bismarck. Bismarck, you wanted to weigh in on, I was just having a little hissy fit rant about pools and parks and rec, I guess, really, and what we need. But what are you thinking this morning? Go right ahead.
Well, people have forgotten the purpose of a community pool. This Rogue X stuff is all corporate and money-making, you know, greed. If you go to Jackson Pool, the one right there that they built way back when, there's a flagpole that never has a flag on it anymore. And there's a bronze plaque that was put on that flagpole. It explains everything. Jackson Pool was built by veterans of World War II. And on it, it says, we built this for the sacrifice so that children could play free. It's right there in the bronze plaque. Everybody should go to Jackson Pool, find the little park right next to the pool, walk up to that flagpole and read it. It'll make you cry.
And now it is like everything about parks and recreation is, okay, how can we put a fee box in front of it or a membership about it and fill the good old boy motel network, right?
Right. So there's no playing. It's all paying.
I appreciate the call. Thanks for sharing that. Let me go to Todd. Hello, Todd. How are you doing this morning? Welcome.
Pretty good. You were talking about possibly shutting off streets and making them kind of outdoor walking areas. And
well, one of the plans on downtown's Main Street, of course, now this is a long shot, but still, the good old boy network would love the, okay, we eliminate the cars and we do the trees. We make a $10 million kind of some Eugene-style sort of promenade or plaza, you know, downtown. And all of a sudden, that will make downtown attractive to everybody. You know, these are sort of the plans that get thrown at the, you know, at the wall, so to speak.
Well, there's nothing new under the sun. When I was living in Southern California, in Burbank, California, specifically, there's a major road, a historic road called San Fernando Road, and it connected some of the missions and stuff, but it was a major business thoroughfare. In the 1960s, in the business district, they decided, you know what, we need to have it without cars so people can just walk from store to store. And they called it the Golden Mall. So, of course, they shut off, you know, about a mile and a half of streets. And for about 30 years, the businesses went downhill and they suffered. So then they, you know, it wasn't anything about, you know, climate equity and climate-friendly areas and all that. They were just strangling the businesses. So they undid all the work they did, and everything was rejuvenated because people needed to get in and out. They didn't want to park, like you said. Not everyone wants to walk a couple of blocks with all their groceries or shopping materials or whatever it is.
Yeah, and I assure you, a lot of women do not like the parking prison style of shopping in downtown either. Once you go to the you know, the bunker type thing, and you hope that Uncle Pervy's not hiding in the corner as you're, you know, loading up stuff into the vehicle that you drove down.
Okay. Yeah? And your last caller talked about the pools, and all these little community pools were for the main clientele was supposed to be children. So if they centralize it out on the west end of town, what does that mean? Kids are going to be walking longer distances to get there, or have to ride their bike on streets longer distances, or have their parents drive them?
Well, it's mostly going to be their parents drive them. At the same time, we're not supposed to drive, but yet you take the main attraction. You see, this is one thing I thought that Kurt Ankerberg, you know, for whatever other issues that he may have had running for office, he was absolutely right about that. When he was talking about, you know, what the neighborhoods needed were neighborhood pools. They are expenses. We get that. But at least they were a true community good, and your kids were able to go and walk and play and learn and swim in your neighborhood rather than having to go from Southeast Medford all the way to Northwest Medford in order to be able to enjoy that. That's all I was getting at, I guess, here. Okay?
Yeah. And just one last thing about the proposed different city planning for Medford and high density in downtown, and talking about getting rid of setbacks. If you want to see how stupid no setbacks are for housing, go to Central Point in the Twin Creeks neighborhood. They just finished some three-story, what do they call them, affordable housing areas. Mm-hmm. and there's zero setback from the sidewalk. It is so weird. So let's say you're walking down the sidewalk. If you stop in front of somebody's unit, their living room window is right there. There's no setback. You could reach out, put your hand on their front window. So if they have their blinds up, you're essentially looking
into their living room is what you're doing. Yeah.
You absolutely.
Yay. Yeah, you see that's great, Bo. That's affordable. That's fostering community. That's fostering community to expose yourself out of your living room to the sidewalk, okay?
And the lie is that they keep repeating, we just don't have enough developable land.
There's plenty of developable land. They don't want to do that, yeah. Though. Everything's supposed to be within the urban growth boundary.
Because the state says so. Well, I got a letter from Habitat for Humanity, and one of the things they said was there's not enough land and it's too expensive. I did some math. Oregon has almost no people in it. If you take the states of Vermont, New Hampshire, Maryland, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and I forget what other small state, all of those together don't even equal half of the land mass of Oregon.
You are absolutely right, Todd. It's just it. Everything when it comes to developable land, the shortage of developable land is a state-created shortage. It is a completely artificial construct. Appreciate the call. Thanks for bringing it up. 770-5633. Why is there a lack of the developable land? Look at your legislature. Look at your laws. Look at your governor. And look at your gangrenes. This is the Bill Meyer Show. Mr. Outdoor standing by. We're going to talk with him in just a moment. We'll have more of your calls coming up after the Outdoor Report, okay?
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is celebrating MED. Here's Bill Meyer.
And we'll have the calls mostly after Mr. Outdoors is done with his report. We're going to be talking about the outdoors and also Val Kilmer, too. I think we should honor that and make sure and mention this, because I'm still looking to watch for Thunderheart, by the way, Greg. But everyone's telling me that it's behind paywalls right now. You have to rent it. It is going to get it on the streaming services right now. I don't know. Maybe they put Thunderheart behind it for that very reason. He died. Oh, we got to make some bank here on this one.
Well, I don't know. And then you've got streamers now throwing up every major movie that he did. We have Hulu, for example, and Tombstone, the Top Guns are up now being put.
Yeah.
Heat is up now on Hulu. But, you know, yeah, some of these other performances that he has that are just incredible. It doesn't surprise me. They're sticking some of them, you know, behind paywalls, and you either have to buy them or you have to rent them. But two of those that if they are behind paywalls, that absolutely are worth the money to see them. You mentioned Thunderheart, but the other one is The Ghost in the Darkness. And there is our Mr. Outdoors tie.
All right. That is The Ghost in the Darkness. I have not seen that one. Tell me about it.
Okay. The Ghost in the Darkness is actually a true story. John Henry Patterson, the character that Val Kilmer is playing, definitely did exist. He was hired to be the engineer to develop a bridge across the Savo River. The British were in a race with the Germans to get rail service built out in Africa, and everything was going great for the British until they hit Savo, and then everything started going terrible for them. And what wound up happening was two male lions descended on the railroad camp.
Yikes.
Where they were trying to build this bridge over the Savo River. And these two lions went on what I believe would have to be the most horrific spree of killing humans, but also eating them. If I remember right, it wound up being somewhere around, I got 800, 900 in my head. It was an incredible number.
800 to 900 humans chewed through by these two lions. Wow.
These two lions, two males, and they defied every attempt to kill them. And the story was they were actually demon spirits summoned by, you know, a tribal leader to curse and then attack the British people building the railway. Well, John Henry Patterson eventually did kill both of those lions, as shown in the movie. Both of those lions were then stuffed and sent to the Museum of Natural History in Chicago, where they're on display. Now, in the movie, they're magnificent maned lions. One is kind of a golden mane. The other one is a dark mane. The ghost in the darkness, therefore, kind of fits.
Mm-hmm.
The reality was neither one of these male lions had manes.
Oh.
They were very unusual that way. They were males, but no manes.
But were they mutants, or do sometimes the lions just not have manes?
Right. Which is very odd for fully mature male lions to not have manes, but they didn't. They did determine these were brothers. They were born in the same litter. But anyway, John Henry Patterson does eventually, A, kill the lions, and B, successfully get the bridge built over the Tsavo River. So those elements of the story that are in there are 100% the truth. The only thing about that movie that was fictitious, but boy, it's a great touch to the story, is the emergence of a character, Charles Remington, played by Michael Douglas. And this is one of the great Michael Douglas roles also. So The Ghost in the Darkness is absolutely, it is an amazing movie. It is in my top three for Val Kilmer. It is number three. Because, of course, Doc Holliday is number two. Because Tombstone, now when you think of Doc Holliday, the first thing that pops in your mind is Val Kilmer's portrayal. And he made something up that is now immortal.
Is this the Huckleberry? The Huckleberry deal?
That is a total ad lib from Val.
And now I'm reading, there are no scripts left of that. But, you know, the thing about Huckleberry is that in the South, the buckles or the handles on a coffin were called huckles. And so there was a term in which, hey, I'll be your huckle bearer, you know, is what.
Right. And that, Val, he was, and I had the great privilege to work for Sam Elliott doing fire prevention work on property he owned in Sun River.
Yeah.
And Sam gave me a lot of insight into Val. Val doesn't just play a character. He fully absorbs it, becomes it. He does all of his homework.
Well, he's a method actor. I mean, look at what he did on the set. Well, look at what he did portraying Jim Morrison. He sang the songs for crying out loud, right?
Yeah, but he showed up on the set of Tombstone, and he was Doc, and he never broke character throughout the entire shoot. He kept the accent. He kept everything. He was Doc Holliday, and he just was amazing that way. You just brought up Jim Morrison. What's funny is I think the earliest movie I ever saw Val Kilmer in was a spoof movie on World War II movies and the Elvis movies called Top Secret.
Yeah, and he was, it was a total spoof on that, and very funny.
And his character is Nick Rivers.
Uh-huh.
He did all of his own singing and dancing in that. When the producers of The Doors, because they were already getting set up to do the movie, they saw him in that, and they said, there's our Jim Morrison, as soon as they found out. He was doing the real singing. Well, then, when they were ready to shoot the movie, Val disappeared. They couldn't find him. What he did was he went and learned 50 Doors songs. Nailed them.
Uh-huh.
Then he shows up, and he starts singing, and I'll never forget Robbie Krieger saying, when he was singing, we couldn't tell if it was Jim or him.
That was really high praise, because you're right. The surviving Doors members just couldn't believe how he nailed that. In fact, they should have had a tribute band after the movie.
should
have just gone out on that. It would have been great. Very cool stuff here, Greg. Very cool stuff. All right. So, well, I'm waiting to see. I'm going to go find Thunderheart. Thunderheart's the one I want to see again. And I've never seen Tombstone. So I've seen so many clips of it. I think I pretty much know what he's going to do on that. But we'll see. All right.
Yeah. Tombstone is a tour de force. And I tell people all the time, if you haven't seen it, even if you don't think you like Westerns, watch that one. Because that is so amazing. And especially when you know the backstory of what happened in the production. What they produced, unreal. And Kurt Russell is the unsung hero. He played Wyatt. Kurt's the unsung hero of that. He saved that whole thing. He kept that movie going after the studio fired Kevin Hare, who wrote the script. But Kevin Hare was supposed to direct it, and then the studio lost faith in him. And then they brought in, I just blanked his name. Anyway, he'd done Rambo movies. He'd done other stuff. And the cast just did not bond with him at all. And Kurt Russell stepped up and essentially became the director of the movie, called all the shots, and he saved that thing. And Tombstone went forward because of him. And Sam told me, if not for Kurt, he goes, I don't know that that thing ever would have gotten completed.
All right, very good. Mr. Outdoors here. Why don't we get into the bit of the outdoor news here as we think about Ghost of the Darkness and everything else, and certainly going to be doing that. It's going to be nice weather this weekend. We get back to some wetness on Sunday, you know, apparently. And is the real hard spring going to be still a few weeks off the way you're looking at it?
Here's what's going to happen. At least I can say this now. In the next 7 to 10 days, I don't see anything that looks like the kind of major winter storms we've been going through.
Okay.
What it looks to me like is we're going to see a lot of what we would typically see in March. We're going to be having disturbances come in. We're going to have showers, but we're not going to have these big major storms with a lot of wind and a lot of rain and a lot of mountain snow. That kind of is transitioning away. But we are definitely going to be seeing unsettled weather coming through, and it will cool down. This weekend, today, tomorrow, 70s. Mm-hmm. Sunday, probably upper 60s, around 70. There is that chance for showers coming in later in the day, but right now it feels like Sunday is mostly going to be a really nice sunny day and then transitioning to some clouds popping up and a chance for showers. So I think that kind of thing, everybody will go, oh, all right, we can take that.
Mm-hmm. What is your favorite outdoor activity? Is it a fishing or something else going on? Hmm? What would you do?
Well, right now, it would be a couple different things. It would be fishing, but the morel mushrooms are starting to pop.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Getting out and walking around, especially in elevations below 2,500 feet, morels are definitely getting out there. You're going to most typically find them with southern exposures where they're getting more sunshine right now, but the morels are beginning to pop. The weather we're going to see today and tomorrow especially will really get them popping, because we're going to be up in the 70s, low mid-70s today, followed by mid to upper 70s tomorrow. And then, like I said, Sunday, well, we start going the other direction and temps will cool. But we'll be probably upper 60s to around 70 on Sunday. So still not bad, and actually pretty seasonal for the time of the year.
All right, very good. Talking with Greg Roberts, Mr. Outdoors at RogueWeather.com, and Outdoor Report sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford. Let me grab a couple of calls here, people. I don't know if they want to talk Tombstone or outdoors. I don't know here, Greg.
We'll find out.
Let's find out, okay. You're all with Greg and Bill. Who's this? Welcome.
Hey, Bill, it's Wild Salmon.
Hey, Steve. Go ahead.
Several years ago, I won a book from you about the history of the Southwest, and it talked about Doc Holliday, and the funniest thing about it was he was a terrible shot. He and another guy got in a gunfight in a bar, emptied their six guns, and neither one of them hit anything.
Really? No kidding.
Yeah, no, the reality, the gunslinger, you know, the kind of the thing they do put across in Tombstone with both Doc and Johnny Ringo. The reality is it doesn't quite happen that way. Those weapons, and if you get your hand on a true original, you kind of start to understand it compared to today's handguns. Those
are sloppy.
Really?
Yeah, they're sloppy.
Antiquated.
Yeah, they're sloppy by comparison for sure. That's a great story, though, but you're absolutely right. Of course, there's another aspect of this that we didn't mention, though. A lot of whiskey lubrication may have gotten in the way, too, of the...
Yeah, for sure. And then the one thing the movie did show right at the beginning in Tombstone, what Doc was actually far more known for being lethal with, knives.
Oh.
He was very good with knives.
Yeah, it's up close and personal for sure. Let me grab another call. You're on with Mr. Outdoors. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Welcome. Yeah, good morning. This is Terry.
Terry, what are you thinking?
Hey, Greg, I looked at the United States map for drought, and I see Oregon has zero drought in it, which was awesome, or is awesome. How are we doing on snowpack and water equivalent?
Oh, yeah, I posted that earlier in the week on Rogue Weather's page, so you can go look that up on Facebook. But if I remember right, we were somewhere around 150 to 160% of normal now in the Rogue Basin, and it was like 160 to 170 for the Klamath Basin. So, no, we're doing great. We've got absolutely no concerns at all. The reservoirs for the time of the year, all of our reservoirs are above where they would normally be for water in them. So, yeah, it's going to get real interesting with Applegate when the snowpack really does start melting off, because they're going to have to do bigger releases out of Applegate to keep up with that now than you would normally see in the spring.
All right, well, grab one more call here, and good morning. You're on with Greg and Bill. Who's this?
Well, good morning. It's Deplorable Patrick, Greg, and Bill.
DP.
And, I know the voice.
Yeah. I know yours, too.
Yep.
It's always a pleasure to talk with when Greg is on, because he knows everything. And do you...
Or like me, he thinks he knows everything. You know.
Careful now, I don't know everything, just some things.
But you know, we're able to present ourselves as if we're pure authorities on everything. Of course, that may be a man thing. Yeah, I don't know. But just go ahead.
I think so. So I'm going to roll the dice. I remember years ago when I was driving up and down I-5 a lot, and we used to be able to look off in the distance off to the west and see trucks way up there operating the Hannon Nickel Mine.
Yeah.
And then along came these destructive politicians and shut it down. And now mm-hmm. we got Trump. Do you think the Hannon Nickel Mine is going to come back?
Hmm. I would say because of who sits in the White House now and a lot of changes they're making, it's entirely possible.
And let me chime in on that, too. Let me chime in on that, Greg, because when Scott...
Nickel's a valuable resource.
Yeah, when Scott Bessent... You know, you have to look at a lot of what's going on right now through the lens of Scott Bessent, who is, of course, Treasury Secretary. And I will take you back to a press conference that happened a few weeks ago. It was the same day, Greg and Patrick, that they had the... all the tech bros out there talking about their $500 billion AI investing. Remember that?
Right.
All right. And Scott Bessent is talking about the creation of a sovereign wealth fund in which the resources of the country are investable and will spin off income or royalties to the federal government. And when they're talking about that, given the incredible indebtedness of the United States, and then they're whacking global trade right now in order to restart domestic, getting more domestic manufacturing, I would dare say, take them at their word, serious as a heart attack, and in spite of what gangrene and the, and who's the big KS wild guy, George Sexton, you know, the George,
yeah.
You know, in spite of the George Sextons of the world, financial bankruptcy, which is what the United States is technically in right now, it just hasn't really been declared, is sharpening the minds. And this idea of we're going to burn the forest and bill the taxpayers, I don't think it's going to happen or keep going for a lot longer. And that would also include sitting on stuff like the nickel mine that you were talking about, Patrick. It's just, now, I could be absolutely wrong, but they're serious about it as far as I can tell. Okay?
Well, I think they might... declare it a strategic national, I'm trying to think of the right term, but a strategic resource, and that changes the game on everything.
Yeah.
I'm really, really happy overall with Trump and with the prospects for this country.
Yeah, we'll just have to see if there will be enough roadblocks thrown up in front of him. We don't know. But the days, once again, in which you're going to lock up every resource that we have here, you're going to burn the forest, bill the taxpayer, and not really try to get any wealth out of these resources. I think necessarily, and it's just a math problem here. You know, it just can't go on any longer. I appreciate the call there. And Greg, I appreciate your take on it too. We will talk next Friday, okay? Have a great weekend.
Hey, real quick, because of what you just said, there is all kinds of buzz going on, and it does sound like that fighting fires, they're going to pull the firefighting aspect of Forest Service and BLM out of the agencies and make firefighting a completely independent effort, and I would totally support that.
That would actually be quite helpful, wouldn't it, overall?
It absolutely would.
Yeah. All right. What about the budgeting? You know, the budgeting for the Forest Service, though.
That part, obviously, you know, there's still things...
It's okay.
Things they would have to work out.
Mm-hmm.
But newly elected Senator Tim Sheehy from Montana, he's making good on everything he said he was going to do. He's pushing forward to get the firefighting positions year-round, get them benefits. And he said he wanted to take the firefighting effort independent from BLM and Forest Service, and it looks like they're moving down that road.
Very interesting. We'll have to keep up on that story for sure. Hey, Greg, I was reading this morning that they ended up reinstating the tour guides over at, is it Yaquina or Yaquina? I forget how you pronounce that up there.
Yaquina.
Okay. Over in the northwest part of the state. Do we have any other national parks or places like that that are still sort of unattended at the moment, or do they have that all? You know, some things, when you're in the middle of firing a bunch of people or laying off or reassigning sort of people, there will be mistakes made, no doubt.
Well, and here's what also happened. I mean, that made headlines that, oh my gosh, they did this.
Uh-huh.
What they didn't report was how many people were hired back on within a week to 2 weeks. You'll still find stories out there going, they fired all these people. Well, unfortunately, I think the agency that has suffered the worst, that they clearly have not restored the staff yet, National Weather Service, and especially at this time of the year. However, that said, you know, especially with our severe weather outbreak ongoing central and eastern U.S., we have not seen any decrease in their ability to crank information out, the essential life-saving information to the public. There are other things, though, we are concerned about. We lost some stations that are now not doing any balloon soundings of the atmosphere, and we've got others right in the heart of Tornado Alley only doing one balloon sounding a day. It's those stations, especially in Tornado Alley in the Deep South, where the severe weather is hitting, I think they should be doing 3 balloon soundings a day, 6 a.m., noon, 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring up an uncomfortable question here. Hey, Greg, uncomfortable question here. Are they going to replace weather forecasters with AI in these agencies?
I don't believe they could fully do that, but some aspects, there are definitely some aspects you can feed the model information mm-hmm. into it, and AI could take it and run with it. But there are other aspects of what the staff meteorologists do for National Weather Service. You can't ever possibly fully replace them with AI. There's no way. And I could get into this, and we would be still talking at 10 a.m. with no commercial breaks.
We'll have to hold off. That'll be another day, okay? Let me grab one more call here. Do you have a question for Greg or something else this morning? Welcome.
I apologize for calling back with this wild salmon again.
Yeah, okay.
You know, the thing that you just said about the Forest Service losing their firefighting agency, the Interagency Fire Bureau, taking that away from the Department of Agriculture and Department of Interior mm-hmm. means that their budget goes down by 40%.
Yeah,
it's all overhead.
Seriously, yeah, it would, because the firefighting side of it, when you look at the budgets, you're right. It takes a huge chunk in both of those agencies, but in reality, so much of what they do with their resource, let's say they put 15 engines, four crews, two hotshot crews in here in Medford, and fire season starts breaking loose. The reality is, and I watch this happen with their resource report every day in fire season, those resources get moved all around the country. And sometimes, and we have definitely had it happen, we've had lightning bursts roll through. We've had all these fires starting, and we don't have enough resource that should have been here because resources that say they're from the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest, like the Hotshot Crew, or from Medford BLM, like the Veterans Crew, Crew 10, yeah, they're supposedly Medford-based resource, but the Rogue River Hotshots are, let's say, in Alaska, and Crew 10 is in Colorado.
So they're just breaking divorcing. Out. That's why they're divorcing the fire service from the actual district itself and just having it be its own. In other words, we got firefighters. They go wherever they're needed. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. They become a federal resource. And what Senator Sheehy is saying is, well, let's break this out. Let's create this. And he's looking for a model that kind of makes that a little better operationally, especially for initial attack, mm-hmm. especially here at Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest and Medford BLM, where we have definitely suffered in the past from not being able to put enough of an initial attack on fires. And then the other thing that they clearly need to evaluate is their own policy on fighting them once they get into extended attack.
All right, very good.
I'm really hoping we're going to start seeing some modification of the big box burn it ourselves approach, because we definitely, especially here, need to see that part happen.
All right. Greg Roberts, RogueWeather.com. Greg, thanks. We'll talk next Friday. Be well, and thank you for the call, Steve, even though it was two. Yeah, breaking the no more than one call. All right? That's all right. It was a different topic, and it made sense. And by the way, Steve knew his stuff, given his experience in the timber industry before there, okay? Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford, the sponsor then, once again, of the Outdoor Report. We do this every Friday at about this time. We'll check the rest of the news here in just a moment. More of your calls. Find your phone Friday at 770-5633. You can join in. You can be stuff I've been talking about, what Greg's been talking about, what my guest last hour was talking about, or what other callers have talked about. It's kind of like whatever you want to talk about today.
Well, project done right. Quickly, efficiently, and precisely. Who do you call? Clouser Drilling. With over 50 years of experience drilling nearly 5,000 wells, Clouser specializes exclusively in drilling wells. And with four modern drilling rigs, five licensed drillers, and a competent professional office staff to administer your project, you can expect the best customer service and results in the industry. One call dispatches the Clouser team and taps into their vast experience. Visit ClouserDrilling.com.
As the Montana roofing crews travel around Southern Oregon, they like to keep things interesting.
You know, we've been doing so many roofs around the valley, there's not many areas where we don't see our past work.
Ooh, like that one.
Yep, the whole metal package. Roof, siding, flashing, gutters.
Tile job.
Oh yeah, that's a beauty. Luxury home on the hill with tile and copper accents.
Shake.
That traditional barn looks great with that fading shake roof. That one was tricky.
I'm up like three zip.
Oh, wait, I didn't know this was a competition. Composite.
Jinx. Maybe we should just Rochambeau for that one.
Rochambeau? I'm driving. Tie goes to the driver.
Okay, well, I'll give you that one. Metal, you're kidding. Destroyed. 4-1.
Oh, this isn't fair. I got to keep my eyes on the road, and I can't look around and see what else is going on.
While the Fontana roofing crew has fun on the way, they're all business when they arrive at your job site. Visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. The Grants Pass City Council is going to be choosing an additional campsite for the homeless after a judge granted a preliminary injunction last week saying Grants Pass doesn't offer enough space for transients. Locals question how the city of Grants Pass could have won a case in front of the U.S. Supreme Court, and now they're facing a new lawsuit. Well, it's because the Oregon legislature passed a law that local homeless camping regulations be objectively reasonable, meaning transients can sue if they don't think the city is being objectively reasonable. How did the legislature define objectively reasonable? They purposely didn't. Oregon Housing and Community Services is spending $3.5 million on a pilot program to help house people with mental illnesses. Housing 360 will move homeless people into housing and provide services to keep them there. The Oregon Department of Human Services has launched a brain injury program. It'll help people with advocacy, options, counseling, resource navigation, and service coordination. Bill London, KMED.
Always enjoy open phone time, especially on Friday. Well, I enjoy it any time. But Keith's in Cave Junction, but he's actually in Corvallis this morning. You wanted to talk about mining that Patrick had mentioned a few moments ago, huh? Go ahead.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning,
back
sir.
Back in World War II, strategic metals were needed. This region has been known for its gold and the Hanna nickel mine. Mm-hmm. I don't know its history as to when it became a viable source of nickel. I actually had the opportunity in the early 80s of taking a tour of that operation with my geology compadres from SOSD, SOU. Anyhow, it's interesting, the chromium deposits in the Illinois Valley and Northern California region of the metamorphic terrains that are what we live on and make our lives geologically complicated are the same geologic since Trump's presidency and his intentions. I have been praying to hear something like Patrick said, I'm not the only one,
yeah,
that the federal government will utilize our resources. The Kalmanoxis Wilderness Area was built to lock that up. There is a tremendous amount of metal or rare earth potential in that wilderness area by itself.
I think that the conceit that has been operating the United States for a long, long time, saying that says, you know, we need a strategic mineral. It's okay to have a third world kid digging it with his hands in the cobalt pit mine, right? But
yeah,
we're supposed to not do anything here where we could actually do it cleanly and with good environmental oversight there. I think those days necessarily must come to an end, Keith, because it's a mathematics problem. You know, you can't have a $38-40 trillion federal deficit. At some point the slate will be cleaned or paid off somehow, and I think this is what the Trump administration is realizing, and I have a feeling that there are going to be a lot of lock up and keep the people out of resources type folks that may be disappointed over the next few years. We'll see about that.
I hope you're right, because the pendulum swing from abusing and extracting, because I worked out in Nevada in the gold mines.
Yeah.
The root pit is a nightmare. Superfund sites, Anaconda up in Montana. Absolute messes, yes. Same with the forest, with the lumber industry's practices prior to the 60s and the early 70s, when I actually watched the Forest Service doing a darn good job, believe me, I can't believe I'm saying this, of replanting harvested timber units. And yet all of that came to a screeching halt. The practices of the government, i.e. the environmentalist influence.
Well, it was also, though, part, and I got to tell you, though, Oregon is still strong on this deindustrializing. I don't think Oregon will be allowed over time, if it's going to remain part of the union, to deindustrialize, because it's not, you know, they're not going to be able to make it on the globalist trade model that we've had so far.
It's my hope that most of these mineral resources and the Blue Mountains in northeastern Oregon are the same geologic, in fact, they're identical to the Siskiyou region. And I'm hoping, and this is me just hoping, that because it's at a federal level, that you can actually tell the state to get the heck out.
And that could be. And that could be. All right. Hey, Keith, I appreciate that. We burned a little bit of daylight there, and I got to roll, but thanks for the call. Point well taken. And these are the kind of things that we should be watching for over the next few years. And resources will be used and put to work. They're not just going to be sitting around and have us, no, you can't go there. You can't look at it. You can't even walk on it. No, forget about it. I think those days are going to have to come to an end.
Two Dogs Fabricating carries North Star flatbeds.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
By the way, Herman Bereshiger writes me this morning about the Lions of the Savo. We were talking about that with the Val Kilmer movie. And Herman, of course, big outdoorsman, okay? And he says, Bill, there were several dozen people killed. Rumors were said to be hundreds. 800, somewhat of a reach. All right. Could have been for the movie, right, Herman? Something like that. Betty writes me this morning, says Mel Gibson. Actually, it is an interesting story. Mel Gibson's right to own guns restored by the Justice Department. So, yeah. Well, at least maybe the Justice Department's going to have to restore all of Oregonians' gun rights if the state legislature has its way. Kevin Starrett has been putting out a lot of, you know, and all I'd say, Bill, look at these anti-gun bills they're moving. Yeah. And the Republicans are there. As long as the Republicans are there, they're helping pass them. I'm sorry. It's just, only so many times I can say that I feel like the proverbial broken record or skipping CD or corrupted MP3 streaming file. I don't know. Let me go to the phones there. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
This is Logan, Bill.
Hey, Logan. What are you thinking?
Hey, I just wanted to call and give a shout out and just a kudos to, we've had several of these 2040 meetings, the agenda meetings. There was one yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to show up for several of them, but I noticed that almost at every one you see a lovely smiling face of Diana Anderson.
Diana Anderson has been in the forefront
in the thick of it, fighting for us. And I just want to just bring attention to her, and just as a community, thank her for the work and the research that she's doing and trying to stop these agendas that are being perpetrated against our state and open our state back up. She is just a local gem, and we definitely need to value her and all of her time.
Will do. We'll have it back on, get the impression of it, and thanks for you being there too, Logan. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. 754, I think this is Dave. Hello, Dave. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Minor Dave. I wanted to say that the way we could get things started is if they, Bill Clinton took away the funding for the Bureau of Mines. The law has never been repealed, but it's not being funded, and there's no director. This would be crucial in opening up mining all over the place, not just here in Siskiyou County and Southern Oregon.
I would imagine, though, if you're not going to be able to import the minerals and the strategic materials needed to the same extent. And that's really what Trump is doing with these tariffs, right? You get that, right? We understand.
Right.
Yeah.
But we also need to reopen the Bureau of Mines because they get all the research. And under the 1872 law, they get the research. If you had a patentable claim, they helped you get the patent.
Right. Well, we'll see what ends up happening here with that. And maybe you're right about this. The point being.
Yeah, well, call your congressman and tell him to fund the Bureau of Mines.
Okay, well, one congressman can't, but many could. All right?
Many could. Just call as many as you can.
All right. Thanks, Dave. 756 and change on KMED, 99.3 KBXG. All right. 770-5633, 770-KMED. You know what we need today? It's been a lot of serious conversation. We need a dad joke. Dad joke of the day, sponsored by our friends over at Two Dogs Fabricating. And by the way, Two Dogs Fabrication, it's on Bryan Way off Sage Road in Medford. If you have a better dad joke, by the way, we haven't been getting any coming in lately. We need you to put on your dad joke thinking cap. So I have a few lists of mine. Mine are not as good as some of the ones that people send me. What did the janitor say when he jumped out of the closet? Supplies! Okay. Get on the phone, okay? Get on it with Two Dogs. By the way, Two Dogs Fab, if you have a unique trailer or flatbed in mind, Two Dogs Fabricating will design and build and have you on the road in just a few weeks. TwoDogsFab.com. Bryan Way. It is 757.
30 years ago, American Industrial Door Specialized.
106.3 KMET. This is the Bill Myers Show.
John's in O'Brien. All right, John, you're going to take the challenge. I was saying we haven't been hearing enough of the dad jokes. Okay,
I got your challenge.
Okay, all right.
Zoo.
I can't wait. You got two?
All right, I go to the zoo. Yeah, I went to the zoo last week and I saw this small cage. It caught my attention and I went up to it and there was a mean looking piece of toast. Nothing else, just a mean looking piece of toast. But on the cage there was a sign that said "Bred in Captivity."
Okay. I'm glad I bit. Usually when someone says, hey, I have a joke for you, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. All right.
yep.
But, you know, that's the whole thing about a dad joke. It's usually gentle humor, right?
That's right. There you go. Clean and gentle. There you go.
Clean and gentle. Hey, thanks, John. By the way, how are things in O'Brien? I'm just kind of curious.
Foggy as we speak.
All right. On the way to the coast here. No big deal. Hey, by the way, how is that? I've always wanted to ask somebody, you know, that police car, that old vintage police car at the store in O'Brien?
That's a 1951 Plymouth.
1951. Does that still run or is that just a display at this point?
It actually does run.
And do they ever take it out in a parade or run that around the in the area? Just curious.
They used to. The man that used to own the O'Brien store was a guy named Gary Moore, and he was the one that purchased that vehicle and put it up, and it's become an icon ever since. He used to run it in parades, but then the store has been through two other owners since that time, and the other owners have not had the interest in the car the way he did, other than it's basically a landmark.
Yeah, every time I go by there, I just smile. And it's kind of like it's like driving past the Sweet Kron sign, too. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. One of Southern Oregon's sweet landmarks.
Yeah. Good stuff. Hey, appreciate the call, John. And thanks for the dad joke. All right. 8 o'clock at KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. Let's see. What is the price of gold this morning? Friends over at Jay Austin always say, let me see, Burt's Gold. I always go to Burt's Gold page at Lou Rockwell to check this out. Latest price on gold. Yesterday, it ended up hitting an all-time high, like $31.68. Yeah, it gave back some. Yeah, it gave back some today. Hey, I'm looking at a stacking opportunity here. Just a little over $3,000. That is $33,020-something. This could be a opportunity to stack a little bit because you know what happens a lot of times when you have these big stock market sell-offs? People who have gold and silver are net sellers because maybe there's a margin call. Something else is going down and they and in price, and so they're going to sell some gold and silver in order to buy that, all right? That's the way this works. And so I'm looking at silver right now at $29.81. Man, that is a buyable. That is something. Go there because I'm thinking almost in some ways people, I'm reading a lot that silver may have more room to run than gold even at this point. But either way, talk to Jay Austin and Company, gold and silver buyers, and they will help you navigate all of these kind of markets. If you're looking to sell scrap gold or silver, they'll help you with that. You want to add another American Eagle to your collection or get some American silver dollars in there, boy, they'll help you too. Good people, big supporters of talk radio, and they're kind of the kind of people, frankly, you know, Mark and Andrea, that you'd like to have around you in crazy crises like now. Okay. Jay Austin, 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. FortuneReserve.com. News is next.